Louder Than Life is back with Ozzy Osbourne. And a rare appearance from Prophets of Rage. Louder Than Life. Saturday, September 30th and Sunday, October 1st. Go to louderthanlifefestival.com for everything.
Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we've got a special guest for you. We are talking San Diego Comic Con 2017, and we've got a special guest for you. We're joined by film director and producer Megan Farrells Johnson. Megan, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Hey, doing well. I can't complain.
Great.
So we're super excited to have you on today's show and wanted to talk to you about your newest movie, The Ice Cream Truck. Tell me a little bit about kind of like what went into this movie. I know that this is, directorial debut?
It is my second. It's my second feature as a writer-director. I was a producer for a long time, probably around a decade, prior to making my own film. And, I think I just got really frustrated with things not getting made or off the ground as a producer. And ultimately, I kind of felt like if I wore all the hats, I could control the process and make it happen. And I was willing to do things for cheaper than perhaps some directors, and it kind of took off from there. So.
Absolutely. You come from a really rich lineage. You're the granddaughter of author Elmore Leonard. Has creativity or the desire to create, films, did that come from the relationship that you had?
I've always been interested in films and loved movies since even before I really understood who my grandfather was. And, you know, I knew he was a writer at a young age, but his adaptations didn't really take off to my knowledge or in my world until the 90s. And that was when Get Shorty and Out of Sight and Jackie Brown came out. But I think he just... The family happens to have a lot of creative people in it. I'm one of many. My cousin is in a band called Proto Martyr. My uncle is a best-selling novelist. You know, so there's a lot of people in the family that just kind of got the creative bug, and I was one of them. So,
absolutely. Tell me a little bit about this film. I know that this is... horror, and it's something that a lot of people, they think that they can do well, but to me, true horror has that component of psychological, terror or uneasiness, or, most people would describe it as like a thriller, but I call it horror. This genre, what draws you to it, and what was the deciding factor on you, I guess, creating this film?
Well, I love the horror genre, but I like scary and suspenseful, not gross. So the films that I do and the films that I'm drawn to are more, I would say, reminiscent of older films in the genre, stuff that it's not about shock factor. And I love atmosphere and tension and music of horror films, and it's done really well. So I just... I had my experience with my first film, Rebound, and then when it came to doing my second film, when I had written this script, it just seemed like the next best fit. And I had written other scripts for directors and just, had projects in my arsenal, but this one felt the most me, and I felt like there is a void in the horror genre with regard to stories about women, especially older women. And I think usually the final girls or stars are usually, they're 20-something, or it's a story about, an older mother. And there weren't a lot of characters in their 30s. And so it just felt like a natural fit and a good story to tell.
Absolutely. You worked with some incredible talent on this film. You had Diana Russo, who is known for her work on Knight Rider and Being Human and Gossip Girl.
She's incredible in this movie.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she really nailed it.
Yeah.
what was it like to work with all of these people on this film? It must have been amazing, I'd imagine.
The cast was so supportive of this project, and you could tell that they wanted to be there. I mean, obviously, when an actor is signed on to indie films, it's usually because they like the material, not because they're getting, like, Marvel dollars, you know? So they want to be there, and I thought they were amazing, and they were all just team players, and they all contributed a lot to their roles, and I feel very blessed to have gotten such a great cast, and it's hard casting because when you're an independent filmmaker, you're trying to cast people that have a certain level of recognition, but you also want people that are right for the part. And that's a hard thing to do because, like, for example, Emil Johnson, who plays the ice cream man, is relatively unknown, and we had gone for bigger people for that part. We wanted a name. It didn't end up happening. I don't think people understood how to play the part. I think they were nervous that it would be maybe silly. And we lucked out because Emil plays the part perfectly, and he completely understood the kind of hybrid between creepy and amusing. And that's not easy to do. And, yeah, everyone wanted to be there. You know, from Lisa Ann Walter was amazing, wanted to support female filmmakers. Jeff Daniel Phillips understood that his part was small yet very important, and he contributed a lot. I mean, we were beyond lucky, I think, with the cast.
Absolutely, absolutely. What was the filming process like? I know typically filming has its hiccups, and, you know, there are times where, you know, cast members get hurt or just anything can happen. Was this film shoot, you know, working on this project, was it particularly arduous, or did everything come together as planned?
I think everything went really smoothly. We had one incident in the park where the police came because I guess some people complained about noise, which I don't know how that's possible because we were so far from any houses, but it definitely, we lost a very small scene in the climax, and we were never able to get that again because shooting in a public place is really expensive and it just wasn't possible to reshoot that. So we lost a little bit there, but that was the only thing that was a real hiccup. And I would say in terms of my worries of things not going well, I think the Dana Gayer murder, I was the most worried about because she, I believe, was 18 at the time. And, you know, she's a young girl, and I, you know, her kill scene is probably the most complex. And so I was just worried that, you know, she would be okay, and, you know, that we just wanted to make sure we took care of her.
Absolutely, absolutely. What would you say is, I guess, is your most, like, looking back, your most favorite part of the directing process and just putting this film together? Was it pre-production work, the actual shooting itself, or was it post-production, or a little bit of all those things?
I love it. I love it all. I think pre-production is really hard in the sense that you're usually trying to raise money and cast the project and get all of your ducks in a row before you shoot. And usually you have an idea of when you're going to shoot before everything is completed. And so it's kind of like a race to the finish line to get to your start date. So that's a really intense, different experience. And then when you're shooting, you know, we shot this over 15 days. So that's like the rest of the world doesn't even exist for those 15 days because you're shooting and, you know, you're trying to get everything. And that's a really fun experience, I would say, as I'm sure anyone who's worked on a film set can agree. Being on a film is like being at camp, you know. It's like a really fun kind of bubble of an experience that is just awesome and fun. But then post-production is a lot more relaxed, and if you have your team together, can be really fun if you have the people. For my first film, I didn't have the people yet for post-production, so that it was more stressful, whereas this time it was great because everyone was just ready to go. And that's a really fun, creative time because you don't have the stress of timing. You can just spend time kind of fine-tuning your film and packaging it the way you want to with the edit and the music and the sound mix. I mean, people never talk about the sound mix and sound design. It's so important, and it's kind of the unsung hero of a finished product. But then, you know, and then after post-production, then you have the whole kind of getting it out there and finding the right distributor and, you know, so it's years of your life. I mean, I enjoy all of the process for different reasons, you know. I would say the beginning part is the hardest, which is why there's so many people who want to make films who don't end up getting it done, because casting and finding money and being able to get all those pieces together to make a film is without a doubt the hardest.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say is the biggest misconception about indie filmmaking? I know that a lot of people, they just have these generalizations of filmmaking, you know, period, but of course indie filmmaking gets the brunt of those, I'm sure. But you yourself, being heavily involved in the world of indie filmmaking, what would you say is like the biggest misconception?
The biggest misconception is that it's easy, and that, you know, I think a lot of people have a kind of a fantasy view of becoming a filmmaker, and they think that someone is just going to kind of make it happen for them, that, you know, some agent's going to discover your short film or something like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it doesn't happen with that. I mean, you could make a feature and not have an agent still, or, you know, 20 scripts under your belt. Like, no one is going to do it for you but you. And you're your biggest fan. You have the most at stake in terms of making your dreams come true. And so it's completely up to you. You know, I'm related to someone well-known in the industry. That, I mean, is it an anecdote and trivia? Sure. Does it help me with regard to my career in making films? Absolutely not. You know, it's up to me to make it all happen. And it's very difficult, you know, even with films under my belt and even with a history in the industry as a producer, it's always hard. So you just have to kind of put your big boy or big girl pants on and know that you're get ready to work hard. And, you know, with any career, working hard, I think, pays off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're at San Diego Comic-Con tomorrow. And I'm sure that this is probably, you know, really, really exciting for you. What can our listeners expect from you tomorrow at the con?
I mean, I'm not doing any panels or anything. I'm going to Comic-Con. It's pretty last minute. So I'm kind of going to go in an impromptu way. So if I see anybody and, you know, they want to talk to me, I'll be happy to do it. But I literally decided to go to Comic-Con like 2 days ago. So we're kind of still working out the kinks. And, you know, and I have a lot of fans in the genre community and, you know, who have supported me through this process and through, you know, from my previous film. So there are a lot of people I just want to go say hi to, you know, because it's you guys, it's radio, it's blogs, it's all of these, this community that supports the talent and the filmmakers, and we would be nothing without that. So, you know, I want to go and just, like, show my appreciation to the community I love.
Absolutely, absolutely. Is there anything that you're looking forward to, seeing or partaking of, you know, while you're there?
I've never been to Comic-Con. I'm super excited.
Oh, wow.
I've never been. So, yeah, I have no idea what to expect. I will not be dressing up in any sort of outfit. I can tell you that. But, yeah, I'm going to just see what happens. Yeah, I'm really excited. I just think it's a great community. And I think that the indie film community, used to be more inclusive like this. And for whatever reason, maybe because of VOD and people pirating, these smaller movies kind of don't get the same exposure that they used to get in, like, the 90s and, you know, early 2000s, whereas the genre community has kind of really stepped up and supported new filmmakers. So I'm happy that I love horror so much, because I wouldn't want to be a part of any other portion of the film community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I know that this newest movie that we're talking about, it actually is set to be released August 18th, and it'll be available, I believe, on VOD as well as I want to say it'll be.
It'll be in LA.
Gotcha.
It'll be in theater in LA. Yeah. And it'll be on VOD, and then I think DVD is November.
Gotcha. Okay. Have you
started... anywhere you rent movies, you can rent it.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Have you started on your next project yet?
I have, I have the script to finish for my next project. So I started kind of getting into the very early stages of pre-production with it. It's called Hunting Season. But then kind of all the press started coming out for the ice cream truck, so I put it on the back burner for a minute. But I'd love to shoot it next year, and that's my kind of my target. I'd love to do it next summer.
Okay, okay. That's exciting. What inspires you as a filmmaker, as a creative type? I know that, you know, we all get inspiration from different things, people, you know, events. But you yourself, what would you say inspires you?
I think just great stories about people and great characters. That is what inspires me. And I love when a film can kind of deliver the full package where, you know, I get the most goosebumps when I see a film that is just really intense and has great music and I'm just so drawn in, like a movie like Drive or It Follows has that kind of feel where you're just like hypnotized. And those are the kinds of movies that I love, where they have everything, whether it's how it's shot and it looks artistic, it sounds artistic, the acting is great. I love when films can do that, where it becomes kind of a piece of art.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love those too. Like It Follows was, to me, it was so out of the box, and it had so many different meanings. You know what I mean? It's to me that's true horror. You know what I mean? It's like
absolutely. And there are some people that probably didn't like It Follows because it wasn't bloody enough, or you know. But horror comes in all different shapes and sizes, and so we all kind of, you know, like everyone has, I think, kind of a favorite subgenre.
Right. Which brings me to my next question. What is your take on horror? I know, like, you yourself, you know, you're a proponent of it because the films that you make. Do you think that horror has lost its edge? Because when you look at films from, like, the 70s, the 80s, even the early 90s, up until now, it's like a lot of horror films will rely on special effects and blood and gore and nudity as opposed to, you know, strong storytelling with, like, psychological terror and, you know, intrigue. How do you feel about that?
Well, there's definitely an audience that wants blood and boobs, you know, and and that's their prerogative. You know, it's not what I do because, you know, there are all these sexism undertones in my last film, so clearly that's not what I'm doing, but you know, I think there's lowbrow material in every genre. Horror's got it too, you know, and sometimes people just want kind of guilty escapism, and that's okay. I mean, I watch reality TV sometimes, you know, that is lowbrow escapism too. So, you know, I'm not going to judge that because everybody's kind of got their thing. And, I think the horror genre definitely goes through cycles. There have been films recently that I've loved. I loved The Babadook. There are other films like that that I think paved a way for different types of stories in the genre. So hopefully that will continue, and there will always be, you know, hilarious creature features and really gross, shocking industrial horror films as well. I'm going to make a more retro 70s style horror because that's what I love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Megan, where can our listening audience find out more about you and keep abreast of your coming projects?
Where can they learn about me? I mean, I have a Twitter. I think my Twitter is Meg Freeld, and then I have a Twitter for the ice cream truck. And then Instagram. I think I'm. No, am I? What am I on Twitter? Oh my God, I'm terrible at promoting myself. I don't even know what my my ice cream truck Twitter, which I also run, is Ice Cream Truck 3, and the Instagram is Ice Cream Truck Movie. My Instagram is Meg Freels, and then there's also an Ice Cream Truck Facebook page and a website, so you can find it a lot of places. It has a pretty strong internet presence, I would say.
Very nice, very nice. Megan, I want to thank you so much for joining us on today's show, and I'm a lot of questions, but I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
Just thanks for having me, and I'm very excited to go to Comic-Con, and you might see me poking around somewhere checking it out. So,
absolutely.
I appreciate you checking it out, and check out the ice cream truck on August 18th. It'll be on VOD.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Guys, that was producer and director Megan Freels-Johnson. We will put the link to her social media accounts in the body of this post. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We're also on your iOS device. If you've got an Apple product of any kind, you can listen to us by going to the iTunes store, search iTunes, and search podcasts. Our show name is Redefining the Counterculture. You'll be able to hear this interview there. We're also available for Android users. If you have an Android phone of any kind or Android device or tablet, you can listen to us by going to the Google Play Store, search Google Play Music, and then search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. Lastly, if you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can watch us right in the privacy of your own home. We have over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews all free of charge. Just go to the Roku Channel Store, search for our name, and you'll be able to start browsing all free of charge.
Louder Than Life is back with Ozzy Osbourne and a rare appearance from Prophets of Rage. Louder Than Life, Saturday, September 30th and Sunday, October 1st. Go to louderthanlifefestival.com for everything.